Excited to welcome Los Angeles Clippers assistant coach Chris Holguin to the Basketball Podcast. Coach Holguin is entering his 10th season with the LA Clippers, where he currently serves as an assistant coach. A native of El Paso, Texas, Holguin's path began as a student manager at the University of Texas at San Antonio. He went on to coach high school basketball at the Merritt School in Washington, D.C., served as operations assistant at his alma mater, UTSA, and worked with the Reno Bighorns of the NBA G League before joining the Clippers in 2016. Since then, he has advanced through roles including video coordinator, player development coach, and two-way coach, steadily building his reputation within the organization. Over the past decade, Holguin has worked extensively with rookies, two-way players, and NBA veterans, while also traveling globally to train NBA stars. Known for his defensive focus and passion for player development, Holguin has become a trusted voice who thrives on growth, connection, and teaching, making him a valued part of the organization for nearly a decade.
Hey, Coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable, and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group Membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Coach Holguin, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
How you doing, Chris? Glad to be on.
Awesome to have you here and grateful to connect with you. And so many things we're going to go into with you. And I want to start with this one. 10 years with the same organization. You worked your way through the organization as well. And that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, no, I've been really lucky and blessed to work with amazing people as far as Lawrence, Steve, creating the culture that we have. Obviously, T. Lou, he's been just not only just like somebody to look up to, but like a mentor. And then all the great assistants we've had from Brendan O'Connor, JVG, Jay Larinaga, the list goes on and on. And it's just been 10 years. I'm really lucky for sure.
Talk to us just a little bit about how does that help you, having been in so many different roles within an organization, from the G League to the NBA team? How does that actually help you?
As a young coach in any level, you want to impress Ty, you want to impress Doc, you want to show them how much. But early on, I really realized that it really didn't matter what I knew. And obviously, I can chime in when I had an opinion or when I had the information and the research to back it up. But for the most part, I always looked at every single day and every single moment as like an open book. So even though I think I thought I knew something differently, or hey, I like this action better in the situation, even if I spoke up and I would just listen first, then gather my thoughts and just kind of be like, okay, this makes sense. And to me, it's really helped me grow, not only as a coach, but like just a learner, just lifelong learner. Like I think of myself as I'm able to be in a coach's clinic or a podcast every single moment, every single day, whether it's a phone call with one of the coaches, whether it's a coach's meeting, whether it's just talking shop during a breakup in between practice and lunch. Just trying to be curious has always been really, it's really helped me because you're never on edge. You're always just trying to learn. And then you take what you need. And obviously you come up with your own philosophy whenever the time is right. But right now it's always just, we're trying to perfect the Clipper way.
It's such a beautiful way to say it. Thank you for sharing that. And one of the ways that I know you've grown as a coach over the last few years, you've had an opportunity to dive deeper into defense, having coached the Summer League defense, and then obviously having Jeff Van Gundy there and one of the elite defensive coaches in the world. Talk to us a little bit about defense and how that's helped shape your career a little bit as well.
I've always wanted to be, my path was always, hey, if you're going to be an NBA head coach, you got to be a defensive coordinator. And just seeing how from Lawrence to Brendan O'Connor, Mike Woodson has done all the way up to Jeff Van Gundy, the amount of preparation, the amount of dedication to your craft, to be the most prepared, to create your own style and your own system, the amount of research it takes. I always looked like, wow, If I can do that, maybe I can be a defensive coordinator one day. And then if I'm good at that, maybe I get be the head coach of a team. So for me, just really just taking in their process. Jeff has been great. I was able to coach the defense for Summer League, and him just coaching me as far as, hey, not only do you have to coach the players, but you have to coach your staff to use the same terminology. And you have to make sure that everybody's aligned. Instead of using 20 words, let's keep it to a two-word cue. And where we can always just say one thing, where we're not wasting time speaking or coaching, it's just boom and they adjust. And that was really helpful. But it, like you said, it's you're not only just coaching the players, you got to coach the coaches and the staff. So me and the head coach, Jeremy Castleberry, and even Dante Jones, we would always collaborate and how are we going to attack this together? So just seeing those guys, it's been an amazing opportunity to just learn from the best. Like I said, I'm always going in with an open mind. And then when my opportunity's there, I feel like I'm ready to capitalize. Never trying to skip any steps.
No doubt. And the Clippers jumped from, I think it was 16th to second in defensive rating this season. And what are some of the specific things, maybe schematically first, that big picture that kind of helped lead to that change?
For us, it was we really wanted to improve. It sounds simple, but the basics, right? The basic fundamentals of transition defense. You can't give up layups and easy threes. Defensive rebounding, we went from 24th to first, which is you got to finish every defensive possession. And then just careless fouls. We didn't want to give up any and ones. And no matter how hard we wanted to fight through screens or how much we wanted to attack the ball, we knew that we couldn't be careless with these fouls because everybody's either getting you on a shot fake or they're doing these low pickups. So just being very meticulous on those. Also, the modern NBA alignments. Right. We want it to be more, we want to take away what the offense wants most. Right. And to me, the offense wants to play in space. Right. The ball handler wants to go down in space, whether it's strong hand or off an action. It's they want to play in space. The snipers, the catch and shoot guys, they want a space in their closeout so they can either go and catch or drive. And even drivers, they don't want you to chest them outside the paint. They want you to be spaced so they can pick up, do their swing step finish or kick out. So just the elimination of space versus all these alignments, just by even simple things like just being more square, closing out towards to the chest, like closing out square into the chest. And then every time we could, sending it to the crowd. And just making sure that one, we're taking away what the offense wants most. And secondly, no one's going to make us play cautious defense. And so we were more aggressive in different ways. And I'm not saying we were careless or reckless, or we just picked our spots much more. And it really helped us alleviate some of the modern crashing, so to speak. If you're not shooting it and you were attacking the ball, you can't get the offensive rebound. So finding different ways to adapt to the modern NBA. And all the spacing and all the movement, just upping the physicality, upping the ball pressure, and not being afraid to go attack the ball.
Despite the rise in three-point shooting and the emphasis on three-point shooting, the value of the paint still remains the biggest factor for a defense, doesn't it?
No question. No question. We are creating the illusion of the crowd from the strong side. If you're driving here and our strong side corner or even the top of the shrink, we are presenting help. And we don't want you to think there's a driving lane. And even on the weak side, we are pulling in and making sure that if you skip it over the top, it's not going to the lob guy and it's not going to any cutters. So we are always aware of even on the weak side, we are lower, so nobody's cutting behind us. Anybody who's coming to the paint, we're giving a good chuck. We're making sure that the physicality and the ball pressure and and presenting help protects the paint first and foremost.
So this showing early help, talk to us more about that, because that seems to be, again, like a lot of coaches think pack line or something like that, but it's much harder in the NBA because the space you have to cover and obviously the quality of the players and the gravity that those players create. So talk to us about some of the emphasis in terms of being able to shrink the floor and yet still be able to give the perception that you're taking away space, but you're still able to recover to your check.
So we are constantly in our shrink spots. And the goal for us is like no one's going to make us play cautious defense. So with that said, is that we want to make sure that we put our guys in position to attack the ball. And so whether it's on the strong side, we will close our stance and right be in a position to go get it while we're showing our help. And then on the weak side, we are open, ready to break on any balls in the air. So that way, everybody's in their spots. So now we say dominate the lift, for instance, right? When the ball's coming to the double side, we are in our lift. Same kind of concept. I'm low if and we have a couple cues. We can go attack the ball any moment. But the thing is, we want to make sure that our guys are presenting help. And then if depending on the drive, go and attack in the ball, depending on the few situations. And then the amount of closeouts we work on an everyday basis is the heart of our defense. And I know we are big on variables and moving around. And sometimes we make our closeouts longer. We'll do repetitive closeouts where you're getting pretty exhausted. But at the end of the day, over and over, can we just drill a closeout where you're square into the body? Do it over. And it's difficult. It's difficult because guys want to sidestep three if you run them off. Or if you run them off and jump and all they're going to do is drive it and give somebody else an open look, what a good offenses do. So just getting the habit of just not reacting, sprinting to their airspace right after you present. And like I said, we give our guys opportunities to attack, but we don't let them gamble. It's a fine line for sure.
Yeah, definitely a fine line. Take us through a little deeper in terms of closeout. So I'm in a position of help and I need to recover as fast as I can to a position of covering the ball. What are some of the teaching points? What are some of the emphasis in terms of, let's say initially we're taking away a shooter?
Okay, so first and foremost, like we are going to be in our stance, right? We are in our help stance. We're shading the ball slightly, meaning like we're not in a denial stance and we shade the ball and we are presenting help. And I'll give you like our three instances of, for instance, if we will attack the ball if he's going too fast. So slot drive, I'm in the corner, in the strong corner. The ball handler puts his head down and go get it. But you can just tell he's going too fast. They go and catch stampede dribble. He's going too fast, go get it. We have different techniques on how to do it, but that's one of them. The next one is if it's blind, if he's coming down, he gets chested, spins, we want to go and attack it. And then if it's close, and you'll see it more so times, like say a guy's driving, you see a guy in a shrink, you pause the film and you're like, you're right there, brother. You're 1 foot, your hand is right there. Go get it, go take the ball. So just those are our cues. And we have other things. Our goal is to make him pick it up as far as possible. So once, if we make him pick it up and we can close out, we just sprint to his body and we're square. And it's just repetitive drive. You're reading if he can pick it up, and then you read those three situations. If those three situations, we're not afraid to go again. Then Tilu and JVG have given these guys full freedom to attack the ball and be aggressive. And it's like the old Spider-Man, with great freedom comes great responsibility. So we can attack the ball from the right position. We can attack the ball with the right technique. When it becomes a gamble is when we are attacking the ball out of position, meaning they're not in the right spot, shrink spots, or they're attacking the ball with a bad technique, where they're fouling and whatnot. So that's how we differentiate attacking the ball and a gamble. And then, like I said, drilling a closeout every single day from those situations is just, it seems monotonous, but defense is hard and defense can be boring. And defense is going to be 82 games of making you shoot tough shots over and over. So that's how we work. There's going to be a bunch of different games you can do. But for us, we feel that you have to do both. You have to be able to attack the ball and go out. And it's not a skill that everybody has. So we have to work on it over and over as much as we can, whether it's in our defensive vitamins or group work.
Talk to us more about that. I love that idea. It's not a skill that everyone has. And you have some traditional players that we might say aren't very good individual defenders, and yet you had an incredible team defense. So obviously there's ways to account for individual differences on defense. Can you help us understand that a little bit more?
Yeah, so I think for us, we always want to up ball pressure. And it's such an uncomfortable thing to do, right? Nobody ever really thinks I can be up more into the ball. And I'm not talking about extending our defense out at half court. We don't want to ever extend our defense. We want to take away space. So appropriate ball pressure, right? So depending on who you are, depending on who the offensive player is, we give appropriate cushion, right? So enough ball pressure to where you're not overextending, and enough ball pressure where you're not, he can feel you as well. Like you enough cushion to where he can feel you as well. So getting guys comfortable with that is just one of those nuances that just takes time, right? Same thing with closing out to touch. We want to close out to touch, right? And where I can touch you with my hand. And so many guys close short and they're like, how can I close short and square to touch and square? Close to touch and square. And just make sure that, and then you'll catch a drive. And you'll just be surprised that it's a skill that these guys have. And don't get me wrong, some of these guys, we do a variety of closeout games and we try to put them in situations where they can't close out square. And it's tough, right? It's tough. So just being able to constantly drill those situations and then at the same time, hey, look, get out of your comfort zone. Nobody's gonna, we can't put enough pressure on the defense to turn you over and attack the ball if we're not doing those things. So it's a whole mindset. It really is a whole mindset. It's like we have to have enough physicality. We got to put some ball pressure on you, and then we'll have an opportunity to attack the ball. But if we don't have those, if it's not all intertwined, then we're really not going to be able to be put in those situations. And we're almost playing, to me, is a little bit of anti-analytics ball. Whereas if you're just playing shots and they're just shooting the ball up in the air and you're crashing every time, you're in trouble. You're tagging up is a real thing, and everybody in the NBA is adopting it. So it's one of those things that if you don't adjust, then you're going to be in trouble. Because a couple of years ago in Summer League, we crashed everybody and we were trying to experiment and it was great. You know what I mean? So you learn things, how stuff works. So we understand that we have to counteract some of the new modern concepts.
Is it easier to get a less effective defender to be aggressive? And are they a better defender when they are aggressive than as opposed to having them try and obviously keep gaps and different things like that? You're referencing getting into people and getting square. Is that actually make them a better defender?
I think just challenging guys. If you're going to improve defense, if you're going to improve your defense, you have to have guys that want to be challenged. You have to have guys that have goals of being strong defensively, that want to be coached. So those type of guys, those are the guys we bring in here to the Clippers. So it was easy to challenge them, right? And it was easy to, they wanted to be better, and they wanted to be able to help the team defensively. So once we knew we had the right guys, we can just put them in those situations. And they just, to their credit, those guys worked on it every single day. And it started with our top players. And those guys are here in the summer. They're leading the group young workouts when prior years they hadn't done that in the past, and or they had scheduling conflicts. But to see some of our top guys in the defensive drills working with Coach Van Gundy and T. Lou, you could just tell we were all bought in. And those guys, to their credit, hey, just be solid. Do it over and over again. And then we'll make sure that we got your back if he's going too fast, if it's close, or if he's blind. You know what I mean? So just, it was just all intertwined. It was really all intertwined.
You referenced closeout games, and I know you're a constraint-led guy. We had that conversation a
Yeah,
little
of
bit
course.
offline.
Yeah,
We'll
yeah.
have more of that conversation, coaches, later. But you referenced a really cool one, which is literally like you want them to close out square, but sometimes you're going to create in a game a situation where they are not square and they have to figure out how to recover to square, I imagine. Can you give us
Right.
some other examples of these type of games that you play with your closeouts?
So it's a lot of these games that we have a great player development staff with Connor Dunleavy, Quan, Tim Dather. We all come up with these different ideas of like, how can we challenge these guys? Or how can we simulate actions, almost not necessarily trying to trick our guys, but we want to challenge them because sometimes, you know, the same, okay, corner closeout drill, you're at the block, you're in the corner, can get stale. So depending on where we send a guy or it doesn't even matter. We will put a, say he's in the slot and we want to make sure we want to close square, but he's this kind of driver because we're playing this star. We will put a guy, say at the, we'll say he's in the corner, right? And then the help defender will be, the next guy up in line will be in the restricted, I mean, under the free throw line at those dots. So if you end up giving up a strong hand drive to player A on that right corner, you got no help. But if you got to this player, and that'll be like, man, we can't let player A go this way. So we'll put him in the situations. And if you're able to chest them at a certain opportunity point, that you will have that extra defender there. It's 1-on-1 plus one, essentially. So that's how our ways of adding a nuance of, okay, we're playing player B. Player B likes to go, this is what he likes to do. We're going to put you in situations. We got to figure out a way to take it out. And the way we're going to help you in these games is if you get it back to this direction, or if you get it square and he drives this here, you'll have help. If not, you're toast. And so those kind of little constraints, and they're just tiny nuances that really help elevate our game because they know, okay, because sometimes you play closeout drill one-on-one without any incentive to stopping that direction. It's going to be like two dribbles, pound, spin dribble. It's tough to guard one-on-one off a closeout. You got the go and catch. So if we can kind of lead them in a direction, they leave understanding what they were trying to accomplish for whichever player they're closing out to.
Yeah, and a fun way to coach too, to be able to help the individual player improve what they need to specifically improve as well. And we're
Right.
going to dive into that more later. But for me, you mentioned the improvement in defensive rebounding as well. So talk to us a little bit about that. Is it technique, positioning, accountability, metrics? What are the things that kind of led to that leap?
So I think one, it was definitely technique and just a physicality aspect of it. Everything we did was physical and it was difficult, and the drills were tough. The drills are, it's constant. It's constant. It's high pace. It's very, there's no stopping. Whistle goes. It's almost like an army. It's like just, everything's going. So these guys, when they, and then just the technique of, all right, while you're tired, can you execute? We sprint, and it's simple. We talk about it every day. Turn, check, and hit. It sounds simple, but you stop the film. Didn't turn. Not checking. Look at him run right by you. All right. Hit. Did he hit? You turn and check, but you didn't hit. It's very simple. So the accountability part is basically like what we said with the terminology. If it's clear and you can just say those three words, did you turn? Did you check? Or did you hit? And you could stop it on film and say, and they can literally just say, no, I did not. Okay, so what we got to do, what's required to win. These are the basics, the fundamentals of defense, transition defense, defensive rebounding, and not being, you know, fouling carelessly. So yeah, obviously guys have gotten, you know, Wembanyama 7-4. You add terminology. All right, you got to hit them earlier and you got to carve out your radius. You just, did you now, did you carve out your radius? It's because this guy's bigger. If you hit him and check and it's too late because you're not there early enough, you're not getting anything. Or guys are crashing from the elbows. Guys crash from the elbow. Okay, turn, check, and hit, but you got to run with them as well and go get it. You know what I mean? So just, it's all based on terminology and really easy teaching cues. And the accountability aspect makes it is so much easier. It's so much easier because you could say, you could either, you do it live. Turn, check, and hit. Just, and we have that for every layer of our defense.
I love it. Hey, coach, a brief timeout from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. How do you decide who your biggest impact players are? Traditional stats don't tell the whole story, which is why high-level pro and college teams rely on analytics systems like Hoopsalytics to make data-driven lineup decisions. Examining team stats when a player is on the floor tells a more compelling story. For example, you can use net points per possession to determine your best two-way players, as well as your offensive and defensive stars. Or use the team rebounding percentage for each player to see who has the biggest impact on rebounding. The results may surprise you. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit Hoopsalytics.com/ball. That's Hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your games for free.
And help us understand a little bit like how to hold players accountable, whether it's individual or team accountability. Are there certain metrics that we should value more as coaches or certain things that we should consider more in terms of the individual and team accountability on defense?
I think for us, it was always, we had to be honest and direct with every single one of our players, whether it's Kawhi, Zubac, some of the best defenders in the league, to anybody else. You could name anybody who's not those two guys, but you have to hold them all to a standard, right? For us, the standard was a standard. We required you to do those, our main things, right? We had to hope, we wanted to make sure that the basics won, right? For us, the basics win. You can get that done. Then we can be our defense sort of taking away what the offense wants most. And then obviously, no one's going to allow us to play cautious. No one's going to make us play cautious. But in order for us to have any sort of foundation was just clear terminology and clear foundation. So where there was always something to go to, right? Whether it's film, whether it's in-game live, whether it's happens in the game and players on the bench were looking back at me and said, they say, "Hey, we said square on him," or we said, everybody knows, right? So there's no surprises. So the fact that if you can just be honest with your player, tell them, "Hey, we're expecting much more of you," and then lay the foundation for them to just follow the path, the accountability part is everything because they have to be able to go to something. If you end up saying, "Hey, you can do this here and you can do that here," it's kids wishy-washy, but the standard for this was the standard for us. We made sure that we kept it consistent. Our base defense really is as simple as possible with a few things that can make us adaptable, but we didn't want to be all over the place. We wanted to make sure that we were simple, we were simplified, and we prioritized what's most important, really.
And of course, I'm imagining that simplicity helped players make better decisions on defense. And of course, one of the things that connects that is perception. And I know you're a big perception guy, perception action coupling, all that stuff. So talk to us a little bit about how can we better develop this aggressive anticipation that you're referring to in your defense?
Yeah, so it's tough. It is tough because you're not taught to go for certain situations. And really, we've tried everything from, hey, let's drill it where you know it's going to happen and coach is going to drive and dribbling the basketball and the guy's going to come attack it, all that stuff. And it works and it doesn't work. And some guys don't have a knack for the ball. But I think what the best part of our system is we all have our own ways of teaching things. So we're always exploring different ways. And I think being in the right position is first and foremost. If you're in the right position in our defense and with the appropriate ball pressure and the appropriate physicality on any of these drives, you have the opportunity to go attack the ball. And you'd be surprised. Some guys just have a knack for the ball that they just didn't know they can go get it. You know what I mean? So for us, it's just less about we talk about different nuance. We want to attack up the floor. We don't want to attack out and reach. We don't want to reach in. We want to attack up. Different things like that will help us. But in order for us to attack up in certain situations, we have to be in the right spot. And if we're not in the right spot, we're inevitably going to be reaching in. So for us, it's all about positioning and then reading. Is it what the ball handler is doing, the angle of his drive, who he is. We talk about playing guys to their weak hand, attack their passing hand. We play one of the best passers probably ever in the playoffs. And even him, you'd be surprised how they are very strong with one hand, especially passing. And obviously they're capable with the other hand, but if we attack that passing hand, we'll have a chance of getting it more times than not.
Referencing Jokic, of course, for those that weren't
Yeah.
sure. And
Yeah,
that
man.
was
He
an
was,
incredible
yeah.
series, by the way.
Yeah. And we've said it all summer. Those guys, the basics failed us: transition defense and defensive rebounding. And it cost us a game. It cost us. At the end of the day, you could do a lot of schemes, you could do a lot of tricks, but the basics win for us, and those failed us. And that's something we've been focusing on moving forward.
Absolutely. And a great way to motivate your guys in the off season as well. And
Oh
you and
yeah.
I connected over a shared love of CLA, constraint-led approach, and
Yeah.
we got into a conversation a little bit about the ways that you're able to use it and apply it and the open-mindedness of certain players to it and how it's evolving. So maybe let's first start with kind of a basic thing in terms of player development. What are some things that you do in CLA with player development that can help us understand a little bit about how Chris approaches developing players?
Yeah, so for us, a lot of the times it's self-explanatory for guys, the stars. They have a lot of freedom. But for our two ways and our younger guys, anyone under the 1, 2, 3 years in the league, we train them to be role players as far as you got to be in elite shape. You have to run the floor. Two is you got to learn how to play off the ball. In college, these guys they have the ball in their hands or they're not used to not touching the basketball for 2 or 3 possessions. So learning how to play off the ball. That's huge for us. Learning to play for others, right? If so and so is not touching the ball, something's wrong. You know what I mean? So being able to drive the ball and pass it, finding the solution of, okay, let's settle down and get it to the mismatch we have here. Obviously, the NBA is that. And then efficiency, just getting guys, the ROLE, run the floor, off the ball, learn to play for others and be efficient. And we know what that is. We don't really have to explain it, but it's for us, training guys without the ball is huge. So just putting guys in situations like, can they learn to steal a basket or two by cutting? And we put them in those situations. Can we teach these guys how to attack the rim? Not only to get fouled, but to make a layup. So just putting these guys in different games to where we are always just basically going live all the time. And then we will create routines for our guys so that they can come back later at night to get the feel for the ball. Say they want to come back at midnight, they can come in and do their routine, whether and they can come in and they got an intern coming in or their boys are rebounding for them. But when they know we got our group in, we got a bunch of guys. We have a practice squad that really helps us out a lot. We have great staff that is able to get on the floor, and we put them through situations constantly, whether it's reads or it's even problem solving, where it's a little unorthodox, but the players are really finding solutions together where they have to talk, where they have to read situations. So that's really where we come together and just unify, and that's it.
So you're basically marrying these ideas that they can still get their mass reps and they can do that. They're doing that a little bit differently than traditionally. But when they're with you or with a group, then they're getting more of these CLA game situation type reps. Is that my understanding?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We'll put every single warm up with the group setting will be all right. Ball handler is our coaches at the elbow. We got a you're starting at the opposite corner or the short corner, say dunker area. You got a defender in between. Now you just got to read where he's at, and that's our float. Those are our finishes, or you got to finish under the basket. And they know. And then we'll have another one where we like to do 1-on-1 plus one. So you got a defender. You got a guy, and now they're using me. So not only they can come off the handoff, they can back cut, they finish. So we put guys in situations. So all of their reps are really game speed and live. And then, like I said, whenever they have their, if they do go through their routine later on the day, either after practice or whenever it is, they go game speed, but it's just not as game speed as when you're getting chased down with a guy, with a 6-7 guy chasing you after you just created a short advantage. So that's why we like to separate the two. Well, it's tough. You know how it is. Like, it's the best way to learn. Well, then there's different ways to teach it things, but you know, we feel if we can get these guys in actions, they're just it just ex accelerates learning for us.
And accelerates their transfer to games, which is really the whole point of this. And the fact that they're getting these tactical things that they have to explore. And then within that, they can apply a technique that they already have. And if not, then you can help them with the technique. But by and large, you don't need to coach technique as much with these players. You're just putting them into situations where they have to explore the tactic, is what I understand.
Yeah, so a lot of the times, yeah, there's always a time for some of these are the most brilliant coaches. Like we have B. Shaw, who will talk to you. T. Lou worked out with Michael Jordan every single summer on his footwork, and he can recite the entire thing. When these guys start breaking this stuff down, you're just wow. You're just seeing it's like a master class. Everybody's huddling around, and then you see them, hey, you do this, you do that. And then it's on us to like, all right, yesterday, let's work on a little bit of some games. You got to catch the ball in this situation. And if we body you this way, we're going to do that, you know, that Kobe step this way. You might do it or you may not, but I may be here, I may not. Now I just want you to be catch it and figure it out from there. And then we'll put you in the situation. If we want to lead them somewhere, then most coaches will huddle prior. This is where we want to lead the guy. We want him to get this type of footwork. This is how we will defend. If it's not working, we will move the angle. The best part about constraint led is you can adapt in any situation. If it's working or it's too easy, whatever it is, all right, we have a plan A, plan B, and we adjust it, adjust the scoring, and they get what they were learning. Now they're getting the actual reps after being taught by one of the most nuanced, specialized teachers. So it's a good balance of yin and yang to be able to have both of just best teachers in the world. And also, we're giving them different environments the next day. And some people learn differently. Some people learn from that type of instruction. And the application may be take longer or quicker. Just it really depends. We have one player, you can teach him a move, or someone will say something. He will do it in the game, in practice, over and over and over again. And we're like, what are you doing? And this is more in the G League, but that's his kind of constraint-led approach. He'll get taught something. And then he'll go try it in the game literally over and over. And then by a week later, he's unbelievable at move A. So it's interesting. Like, it's just how people learn, how people think. And honestly, guys love the environment settings. It's just so much, it's competitive, it's difficult, it's challenging, and they get to learn on their own. And then where I like it the most is one, you can put them through an environment, and then they teach you something that, oh man, like he's really deficient in this. Maybe we should start leading him into doing more of this footwork because he's really off balance. Or they do something crazy, and you're just like, and which is, we work with somebody with, you put James Harden through one of these constraint-led approaches. He does something out of this world, and you're just like, wow, nobody has done that in this drill yet. Like, it's, and that was incredible. So just seeing these guys, they're the best at the world. They're the best in the world, you know, at what they do. So just, it's fun. They enjoy it. We enjoy it.
I can only imagine a basketball genius like Harden just exploring something and figuring something out. It's got to be so special to watch. But we talked about it a little bit, so I just want you to share it. Like a little bit of the difference between, say, a veteran player and a newcomer in the league. The veteran player, to a certain extent, grew up playing more basketball on their
Oh,
own,
yeah.
more unstructured basketball, versus the new player that's come up through this more of this training and mass rep culture. So talk
Yeah.
to us a little bit about that difference.
To me, it's because it's always a discussion of the CLA versus high reps in anywhere you go to. You could talk to any coach, and I spoke to a bunch of coaches a couple months ago, and they were very curious about it. And they're like, what if somebody needs to learn this or that? And Tante Jones is one of my great friends, and we talk about it, and he's, man, I've seen this work. They just need a lot of reps, and because I did it, and I tell him all the time, hey, you played basketball like 8 hours a day from like the age like 8 to 18 before you went to Rutgers and Duke, and you were with, yeah. He's like, yeah, and I was like, ever since I started coaching high school about 15, 16 years ago, or I think it was maybe 13 years ago. There was trainers, and I was like, I was in Washington, D.C., and there was trainers everywhere. And throughout the year, more and more, it became less basketball and more skills training. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with it. And some of it I wish I would have had, and I'm sure. But at the same time, there's nothing like playing one-on-one against your boys for an hour straight with one dribble, or then we go two dribbles, and then we go, all right, unlimited dribbles, and you're just learning how to play. You're exploring, in which I keep telling some of these older players, like, that was the constraint in the zone, except you lived it and you did it for 10 hours, 8 hours a day. So,
Of free unstructured play. And nowadays, for that to happen, it has to be essentially organized by a coach or an adult. And then you have to intentionally not coach them. And that is a
yeah.
big difference, as you're pointing out, between those players. Is that, and again, I'm not saying better or worse, but as coaches, we do have to compensate somewhat for the new generation and
Which is
how they
nice.
learn the
And
game differently.
I've always been, Chris, is for us, we put them through situations. They can succeed or they can fail. But for us, we're coaches, and we're challenged. We still coach them through these situations. Hey, you're here. You weren't low enough. You didn't dribble at his hip. Next time attack, and now you pound and you dribble. You may not have that situation in this game anymore, but we still coach through all the constraints. It's a balance, because, and for us, we want to make sure that when we do put them through these constraint-led approaches and they start figuring things out on their own, they don't keep making the same mistakes. Because at the NBA level, like, it's, you have to get players better faster. You because the new CBA, whatever the case is, you got to have at least a couple guys on rookies or second-year contracts playing. So there's a lot, you have to figure out ways to get players better faster. And I think this is the way to do it. We put them through situations, we coach them through them, and then we give them their routines, and we just build their habits from there. But it's a fine line. Like, we have to figure out ways to get players better faster. So sometimes it would be better left unsaid, and sometimes you got to say, hey, next time you got to rip through, dribble right at his hip, and then you can do your whatever finish.
And that is part of the constraints-led approach. At least people think it's not coaching, letting
Right.
them explore first before you coach.
Yeah,
Because
exactly.
then you've referred to it so many times already. But then I get to figure out what they actually need rather than me predetermining what they need. Do they need this Kobe Pippett? Well, why am I
Right.
teaching them something that I don't know they need?
Yeah, so it's been great for our, we have a great system. We got a great staff. Coach Sean Fine has been awesome, as far as we put our guys in groups all year last year, basically. And we're just exploring different situations, and that we're figuring out, oh wow, this guy can really pass, right? Or oh, and then we start splitting him up and putting him in funky alignments, and they're driving it, and now it's, oh wow, now this guy's problem solving, so his passes aren't as good. So how does he need more of the problem solving rather than the basic read drills? You know what I mean? So it was interesting. Like I said, we have a great structure and we had a lot of collaborations and we have a big staff. We're lucky.
It sounds like an incredible environment to be in, for
Yeah,
sure.
it's
And yeah,
fun. I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky.
no, I love that. And so many great basketball minds. And you and I were have both been around Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame players that have switched more to a constraint-led approach.
Yeah.
So more, I'm curious from your perspective, what was one of the initial challenges with that?
I think it's just with Chris coming from San Antonio and James likes to work on it, and everybody likes to work on their rhythm. Everybody wants to have rhythm. And for me, it was always just, hey, I want to train you to not rely on rhythm to be comfortable. Let's be adaptable to be comfortable. So putting guys through situations where, all right, you're always reading things, it was a little iffy at first because, you know, the guys, but then in reality of everything, it was more efficient. It's just like we don't have 2 hours to work out our players. They got a game, they got to go down to the G League. Their guys' loads are higher and low. So how can we accelerate things in an efficient way? Okay, we'll put them through some live situations and create the environments that we want. And guys were like, this is awesome. You know what I mean? And for guys like James, he's at every trainer and every guy, and they're all really great teachers. They're articulate, they got good moves. When you put him through certain situations and that he's never done before, as far as, okay, you got to score from here with two dribbles and we're guarding you and you might have a screen, you might not, whatever the case is. And he's just, this is challenging. I like this. You know what I mean? Instead of giving them, all right, you got three dribble combo for your shot while I'm guarding you. No, you got solve this problem. Still got three dribbles. You see the footwork, just like his hips start moving a little different. Like he's creating more separation with his body. And the rep may not look realistic, but as far as visually, but the mental rep is far more realistic than anything you can do with any instruction or even dummy defense.
Because they're engaged, they're challenged, and they struggle a little bit, which is honestly the hardest thing for that level of player is to make them struggle realistically.
Yeah,
Sure, I
exactly.
can toss them 45 things and they have to juggle at the same time, but that's not realistic. That doesn't transfer. So making
Right.
realistically transfer is really hard, isn't it?
And I always make fun of, I always say, hey man, we're training for anti-rhythm, right? These are the anti-rhythm drills, right? Just like in a game, hey, you're coming in the game, you may not have, now this is the situation you got to solve. Or you're coming off and you try to draw the foul and you didn't get touched, but you finish your shot because you've gone through a bunch of different situations where always finishing the shot. You're adaptable. You know what I mean? So just getting our guys to, they eventually like it. You know what I mean? But it's a balance. So you obviously have to give them a little bit of rhythm, and if they want it, we're here
It's
for
what
that.
they're not used to. So I get it. They struggle a little bit because they're not used to it. But once they get used to it, they love it. I get that. But the other part is they're not used to not succeeding. And we see all
Oh,
these
yeah.
off-season clips of players making 73s in a row and different things like that. And I'm not saying that's wrong. Like, it's fun to see
Yeah.
the ball go in that much, I'm sure, for a player, no doubt. But it's hard because when you do these situational things, they are going to miss and they're going to struggle. And I
Yeah,
witnessed that watching
exactly.
Chris Paul work out on CLE. And it was like he was missing. He was struggling. And I'm sure if he just stood in that spot, he was going to make the majority of his shots.
Oh, I'm telling you right now, there's the 10 years I've been in the league, about 95%. Doesn't matter if they're making 10 in a row from three. They can do it. They can do it. And it's amazing what they shot. They shot 27% from three the last 3 years, whatever the case is. In drill work, they can do it. They've drilled it so many times, but then you put them in these situations and you go game to five. You have to be one, willing to lose, two, you got to be trying to win, and you got to be challenged. And it may be the same exact rep, but the challenging part of it is I'd rather have 50 good reps than 500 casual reps.
Absolutely agree with that. And I love the psychology of this because I think that is the new frontier to be able to push this even further for people is to get them to understand the psychology of the player struggling And that, yeah, it may not look as good, but it does actually help them. Because no matter how much, let's say Harden or CP3, how much they memorize a move, there's no point in a game where they're going, oh, wait a minute. Remember this move I memorized way back when? I can apply
Yeah.
it now. They just
Right,
have to
right.
figure it out in the moment. They have to, as you've said many times, they have to solve the problem and be adaptable. So talk to us about what adaptability actually means for a player.
I think adaptability for our guys, it's just being able to, you're not rattled by any situation. You're always, and you've been put in through these situations where you might be a little unorthodox. Your layups are wider than you would if you're a 1-on-0 and your body's contorted, or it might be a fundamental layup, but it's just a little faster. But the adaptability part about it is that you're just able to adjust, but your mind's already thinking of the final product, right? Your body's not thinking of, you don't have 2 feet perfectly aligned with your elbow in and your perfect up and down jump. You know what I mean? But you're still finishing your shot because you've trained your mind to really just overcome any of those obstacles. And I think that the biggest part of like training with the CLA for those guys is just understand, hey guys, like it's not always going to be perfect. And this rep may look funny right now, but at the end of the day, you're just building these mental reps of just overcoming adversity and just because you're not always going to land in the same spot. You're not always going to, you obviously want to, and you obviously like plan to. We had a guy who was shooting on the NOAA and his, I had the guy from the company say, man, he's just messing around. And this guy, he's not a, he shot 47% in the corner three. He ain't messing around. He's adaptable. He could shoot over high contests. He could shoot wide open. He could shoot on the move. And he's not even thinking about it because he works out harder than the game.
People struggle when I say this, but adaptability is more important than repeatability. And I love that example. I get to use that one from now on and talk about that you can still make a ton of shots by being adaptable and not having this one perfect form. And again, mass reps allows you to be perfect with your reps. I'm not saying don't do those, but at some point we've got to get to the adaptability piece because clearly that's the case.
And for me, I think with you have great coaches who are going to put you in these situations. Use those coaches. And then, of course, as coaches, we have to give them the routine where they can come in and they can do their comfortable, they can get their rhythm, and they can do it at night if you want, or they can do it on the road when they're by themselves, or whatever the case may be. But just making sure that it's aligned with what we're trying to accomplish and what they want to do. But that way they have something to go to if they just want to get that comfortability. But just know when we're in the gym here to work, we're here to work and we're going to challenge you. So I think you can have both. But like I said, like when you have all these coaches, we're going to use them all.
And this connects most for me, so I want to hear your thoughts on this because ultimately, when we're showing players film, whether it's on offense or defense, I would say 90% of the film, generally in my experience, is all about decisions. And yet we train them often just based on a technique. And the technique is great, but really ultimately what we care about is the decision. Again, the decision to shoot the open shot or to create a shot to open space. Versus how they actually did it. Do you ever stop them and say, hey, wait a minute, you were wrong. You created an open shot and you used the wrong technique. No, you don't do that.
You find so many things like you can name a different move if you want to. I mean, we have obviously terminology that we use defensively to align guys, but offensively, some coaches do a great job of, hey, this is the Ray Allen, the footwork here, this is here, this. And I'll never forget, I learned something when JJ was coming off a handoff and he threw his inside, the ball in the inside hand. And he was doing it in practice because he said he learned it in the game, I think. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but he was able to cut the guy off. When obviously, when you catch the DHO, you come over the outside hand and you turn your hip and you can attack downhill. He caught it and he threw it with his inside hand so he could cut the defender off. And he was just like, just in the game, it just was natural. And then that became part of his routine. And every time I see that handoff and they throw it in with the inside hand, they're cutting the guy off so they can get shot. I'm like, oh, that's the JJ Redick, even though I don't really use it anymore. And as far as like the actual reps, but to be able to,
It worked
these
for
guys
him,
just figure
right?
stuff out in games. Yeah, it's
Yeah, he
amazing.
adapted and it worked for him. And that's beautiful. What a great example of that. And we've talked about it too. It's like a trainer didn't teach Harden these moves that he uses. He figured them out somehow in moments, or he thought of them in moments and said, hey, I'm going to work on this. And then maybe he went and mass rep them so he got comfortable with them. But the initial impetus for almost everything a great player has done is, to your point, the game situation.
Yeah, and like we some of this stuff, some of the best players, even if they have one or two, say it's just a player, a passer, and a rebounder. I do struggle with how to get guys to visualize being in the game. I feel like when some kids were younger, they'd be like, okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, shut. I think visualization is an important aspect of anything in life, whether you're a businessman or you're your public speaker, whatever case is putting yourself in that moment to get the rep before the rep. Some of the best players I've been around, they do that on the court, where they're by themselves and they're visualizing themselves in the court, and then they end up trying something different. And that's totally different than constraints or anything. It's just a special way of practicing to be mentally engaged, to see the defender, to step back again, shoot the shot. And they've just created this by manufacturing their thoughts and their focus to just put themselves in the game. To me, it's one of the most unique things about the NBA and the players I've just been around and observed. It's amazing. It's amazing.
I love hearing your passion for all of this and the experience of being in the NBA as a coach and that messing around piece where a player just gets to mess around and muck around and stuff. I fear like that's one of the biggest things that we've lost in kind of youth development is those opportunities because
Right.
almost everything's just structured. And to
Yeah.
create those intentional times for a player, hey, I'm just going to leave you for 10 minutes. Just mess around
Yeah.
and figure out
See
what
what
you
you
can
can do
figure
with
out.
it.
Those almost we have to orchestrate nowadays, to your point, a little bit about how players are different, is we
Yeah.
do have to orchestrate those. And I think coaches, I hope you do consider those because Chris just spoke so passionately about how important those things are.
Yeah, and like I said, there's a fine line. You want to make sure, like I said, defensively, I haven't figured out the constraint-led approach for that. I think the way we do it is we do it harder and we do it over and we create this callus of just defensive grit and toughness and doing the right thing over and over. And then offensively is exploring to me. And obviously, like we do some of those games defensively, but being able to juggle both is going to be like the way for at least the NBA coaches to do it, because there is always going to be balance. Because Brooke Lopez, James are on their like 17, 18, 19 year. Some guys just, this is the way it is. And you got to be able to adapt to the way you got to do both. We tell our players, you got to do both. As coaches, we got to do both as well.
I love that answer. And I got asked that actually at the constraint-led approach clinic that I did. And my answer, which is hard for defensive-minded people, is that you've got to try and turn must into possibilities for players. And that's the easiest way to apply this constraint-led approach is that traditionally defense is very much absolutes. And I'm not saying don't start with the absolutes, but if you want them to be able to apply more CLA type stuff or ecological stuff, then we've got to turn musts into possibilities. And it's what you just said is that Brook Lopez. He's going to do it his way, but he's going to do it within the structure that you guys provide for him to do it his way.
Yeah, and then yeah, we're going to support him around it, and we're going to make sure that he learns through like how we're putting him in these situations. But at the end of the day, we have a great staff, and the more you can have different ideas and vibes and be able to combine it without ego and without any sort of like hesitancy, or everybody can just become themselves, I think the players benefit from it.
Chris, this has been an awesome conversation. I'm
Yeah,
so
thank you.
grateful that we've got a chance to connect. I'm grateful to be able to share you with the wider audience now and just so
Great.
fun to be able to hear all your perspectives. So thank you so much for sharing the game with
Yeah,
us.
no, and thank you. Honestly, like during COVID, when I really listened to your podcast, it really opened my eyes. What this is 5 years ago to putting guys in situations and read and helping them explore. That was really the first time I thought, wow. And then having a daughter, you realize, wow, you're raising somebody, you're teaching somebody. There's different ways than what we're all used to. And no, I thank you. It's an honor being on this podcast. And like I said, like, you were one of the first person that really opened my eyes to this whole realm of the constraint-led approach.
Appreciate that, and I appreciate you, and look forward to spending more time with you over the next few years.
For sure, for sure. Thanks for having me on.